Let's return to the book of Judges, chapter number 4. And I think I want to start at verse number 17. We were right in the middle of the story of how Barak and Deborah were involved in a directive from God to put an end to the oppression being carried out by Yabin, the Canaanite king at Hazor, and his chariot force commander, Sisera, who was headquartered apparently down south of the Kidron Valley. Jezreel Valley. And so God brought Barak's forces first to Mount Tabor and then into the plains of Megiddo, just north of the Kishon River that drains that whole western half of the Jezreel Valley. And the forces of Sisera were coming northward, past Megiddo, past Ta'anak. And it would appear, as we will see in the song today, that just as the chariots arrive in the flatland, a monster storm breaks out all over the region. And all of the little streams, the creeks, the riverlets, they all fill up with water and overflow. And the whole area, there just a few miles to the northeast from Megiddo, all of that becomes very wet, very soggy. And the chariots become absolutely useless at that point. The chariots get abandoned, and the charioteers are running away, probably heading back south to their headquarters, and they're going to be tracked down and executed by Sisera's army, by Barak's armory. But Sisera, we are told in verse 17, fled away on foot, but he apparently goes north, heading toward Hazor, the capital of this little syndicate. And he came past the tent of Yael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, for there was peace between Yabin, the king of Hazor, and the house of Heber the Kenite. And I shared with you, more than likely, some sort of business arrangement had been entered into where he was allowed to pitch his tent and run his animals. They're probably down in the flatland north of the Sea of Galilee and south of the waters of Merom, because the city of Hazor is up into the hill country just above that sort of area. So Yael came out to meet Sisera, said to him, "Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me, don't be afraid." They've probably met before. So he turned aside to her into the tent. Remember, these Kenites are Bedouin in their lifestyle. She covered him up with a rug, and he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink." Not surprising. The battle site is a good 20-some miles away, and so he's probably expended a lot of energy jogging, running, trying to get up here and get away from the pursuers. And so he's probably very dehydrated. So he wants some water. And she instead opens a skin of milk and gave it to him to drink and then covered him. And they would have had fresh milk probably that morning that had been collected from the animals and then maybe kept in a cool area. But he also said to her, "Stand at the opening of the tent. If any man comes and asks, 'Is anyone here?' you say no. So he is beat. He is exhausted from his flight, from the rout of his chariot forces. And he needs to rest before he can make the last few miles up into the hill country that Hazor sits in. And so he asks her to lie if anybody comes looking for him. Then he goes to sleep. Now that's where we stopped. That was our little cliffhanger. But Yael, the wife of Heber, took a tent peg. The Jewish tradition that's represented in the writings of Josephus says that this tent peg was made of iron, but it might have just simply been a good sharp piece of wood. And she took it and took a hammer in her hand. She went softly to him as he was sleeping, and she drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast asleep from weariness. And so he died. And this is exactly what Deborah had prophesied, that the victory, glory, would not go to Barak when Sisera was destroyed. It would go to a lady, a woman. And so that woman is Yael. Now I'm going to speculate with you that God had contacted Yael in some form or fashion to tell her that this is what he wanted done. The Kenites had been adopted into the Israeli community ever since the time of the Exodus and the entrance into the country of Canaan, the Promised Land. And I'm sure that she is a good, solid believer in the one true God. And so God uses her to put an end to this oppressor. And now he's dead. Verse 22. Behold, as Barak was pursuing Sisera, Yael went out to meet him and said to him, "Come, I'll show you the man whom you're seeking." I don't know how far behind he was, but Barak got there too late to execute Sisera himself. So he went into her tent, and there lay Sisera dead, with a tent peg still in his temple. She nailed him right straight to the ground. And so on that day, God subdued Yabin, the king of Canaan, before the people of Israel. He's lost his chariot forces. Remember, that's really what gave him the ability to oppress the Israeli people. It's because of these 900 chariots running up and down the valley of Jezreel, the plains of Megiddo, up into the plains just below the waters of Merom, north of the Sea of Galilee, down through the passes, through Mount Carmel, down to the Mediterranean coastline. That rapid force of that high-tech weaponry was what let Yabin be in control. Well, he's lost all that. So he can't be in control anymore. He's basically a guy sitting in a palace on a great big tall mound of a city with some walls. That's it. He's probably got some soldiers, but that's not going to be good enough. And that's why verse 24 says, the hand of the people of Israel pressed harder and harder against Yabin, the king of Canaan, until they destroyed Yabin, king of Canaan. And so Barak was at the head of that follow-up, mopping-up operation against Yabin. And then Hazor pretty much comes under the control of the Israeli people. And later, it will be repurposed as one of their important cities in the north. Chapter 5. I love this chapter. It was very often after a battle that God had provided great assistance in, that a song was composed by somebody prompted by the Holy Spirit. Deborah is a prophetess. And more often than not, prophets and prophetesses composed their prophecies with the accompaniment of music. And so this is going to be the song about what just happened. Then sang Deborah and Barak, the son of Abinoam, on that day. So this is composed in such a way that it is responsive. We don't know for sure how it went back and forth, but it would have in some way. There's one place I think we can be pretty sure it's responsive, and I'll mention that as we get to there. But here comes the song. That the leaders took the lead in Israel. That the people offered themselves willingly. Bless he who is. So because the people were now ready to be led by God through the commander Barak, that's something to bless God over. Hear, O kings, give ear, O princes. To he who is, I will sing. I will make melody to the he who is, the God of Israel. And so God is the highlighted one in this song. And then he is addressed in the song. And it's a historical address. He who is, when you marched out from Seir, when you marched from the region of Edom, that's when they left in the 40th year of the wilderness wanderings in order to go around Edom and come up to Moab area to come across into the Promised Land. Edom is also known as Seir, and so they would have been right there. So God, when you marched out from that area, the earth trembled, the heavens dropped, yes, the clouds dropped water. Now, there's a water theme in this story, in this miraculous event. And so maybe it's poetical here as well, but maybe, again, there was something special in the departure time from Mount Seir, from the area of Kadesh Barnea in that 40th year. The mountains quaked before he who is, even Sinai before he who is, the God of Israel. And so that's a flashback even farther, when they were at Mount Sinai, getting the law, getting the information about how to live in the Promised Land, how to make the tabernacle. The first meeting that they had with God was a lot of shaking of the rocks and a very big deal by Mount Sinai. So the song is picturing God in his power as the leader of the Israelis. Then we have a little historical tie-in. In the days of Shamgar, son of Anat. Now, Shamgar is one of the judges that we have so very little information. He seems to come toward the tail end of Ehud's leadership as a judge. And he seems to be used by God to put down problems on the Philistine border over there between Judah and the Mediterranean coastline. He killed, I think, 600 Philistines using only a farm implement, an ox goad. So in his time period, which means toward the end of Ehud's 80 years of peace, in the days of Yael, we know who she is. She's like right here. Well, we don't know how old she is in this story. I suspect she's probably fairly old. And so this is thinking about back in her earlier days. The highways were abandoned. The travelers kept to the byways. This is when the oppression was going on. when those chariots were going back and forth, everybody stayed off the main roads. They stayed on secondary roads because they did not want to come into connection or contact with these chariot forces. The villagers ceased in Israel. They ceased to be until I arose. I, Deborah, arose as a mother in Israel. So everybody was despondent. Everybody was having issues because Israel was being oppressed. And then God moves by bringing a prophetess onto the scene. That's Deborah. And you'll remember that she was doing her headquarters down between Ramah and Bethel, I think. When new gods were chosen, false gods, then war was in the gates. That was a natural fallout. God had warned the Israelis, you go chasing after other gods and goddesses, I will let the curses come upon you. And that included invasion and war. So when all that happened, was shield or spear to be seen among 40,000 in Israel? And the population of Israel was hundreds of thousands of militia members at this time. And so basically the song is saying there wasn't enough weaponry to go around to arm even 40,000 Israelis. My heart goes out to the commanders of Israel who offered themselves willingly among the people. Bless he who is. So now we're back to the thanksgiving to God for the fact that people were finally ready to do what was needed. Tell of it, you who ride on white donkeys, you who sit on rich carpets or perhaps donkey cloth saddles, you who walk by the way, to the sound of musicians at the watering places. There they repeat the righteous triumphs of he who is, the righteous triumphs of his villagers in Israel. That's a reference to now. Everybody's talking about this great victory over Sisera and Yabin. People are traveling on the roads again, and when they sit down at the watering hole along the road, that's the big topic. Then down to the gates march the people of he who is. Then we come to a part that you can see that it's probably responsive. First we have Barak sing, awake, awake, Deborah. Awake, awake, break out in song. And then Deborah responds, arise, Barak. Lead away your captives, O son of Abinoam. So that's where they probably had little solos, if you will. Then down marched the remnant of the noble. The people of he who is marched down for me against the mighty. For Ephraim, their root, from Ephraim, their root, they marched down into the valley. Ephraim's kind of at the core of the long-held Israeli territory. It's where Shiloh is located. And so they're marching down into the area where the battle was going to take place. Following you, Benjamin, with your kinsmen. From Machir, Machir is on the east side of the Jordan, and from Zebulun, those who bear the lieutenant's staff. So we're seeing the forces of the Israelis gather together. The princes of Issachar came with Deborah, because Deborah is in the war party. Remember that when she passed on the message from God to Barak to get this thing done, he says, I'm not going anywhere unless you go with me. And she says, fine, I'll go with you, but the victory goes to a lady. Issachar was faithful to Barak. That's actually his tribe. Into the valley they rushed at his heels. That's the Jezreel Valley, the portion of it probably the plains of Megiddo that we were talking about earlier. Among the clans of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. Now, Reuben is on the northeast corner of the Dead Sea. So they're a little bit distant from the action of this story. And apparently, they didn't come out. Why did you sit among the sheepfolds to hear the whistling for the flocks? See, why didn't you answer the call? Among the clans of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. You know, they didn't know that they really wanted to get involved in this. One of the problems during the period of the Judges is everybody did as they felt like. And so some of them were a little bit more tribal. And if they weren't directly impacted by it, which Reuben probably wasn't, why should I get involved? Gilead stayed beyond the Jordan. That's mostly the tribe of Gad in the middle section of the east side of the Jordan. Apparently, they don't want to be involved. Dan, why did he stay with the ships? Apparently, by this time in the history, at least a few Dan families had taken hold of a little corner of their coastline, probably right there by Joppa. And so they were focused on plying the seas. They didn't want to come and get involved. Asher sat still at the coast of the sea, staying by his landings. Asher is on the northwest portion of the land of Israel. It's right there on the Mediterranean coast up by Tyre and Sidon. Apparently they too. Why should we go in there? Verse 18, Zebulun is a people who risk their lives to the death. Naphtali, too, on the heights of the field. So those guys were right in the center of the action, and so they get blessed. Then we come to the part that I've already talked a little bit about. The kings came. They fought. Then fought the kings of Canaan. Now, the kings here seems to be a poetic reference to high-placed people in society, not necessarily a king-king. Although there might have been some Canaanite city-states that were working with Yabin at this time. But the Israelis, the only kings that they might have had would be like the head of a tribe. But they're fighting here. At Taanach. Now, Taanach is a town in the hill country of Manasseh, just south of the Jezreel Valley, just south of the plains of Moab, but it's like right on the edge. And water drains right past it. So at Taanach, by the waters of Megiddo, they got no spoils of silver. So the invading army, the Sisera charioteers, got nothing because of verse 20. From heaven, the stars fought. Now, stars are often a poetic reference to angels, and I really do believe that we got supernatural activity being described here. From heaven, the stars fought. From their courses, they fought against Sisera. And then the torrent Kishon swept them away. The ancient torrent, the torrent Kishon, march on, my soul, with might. So there is a lot of water involved in this victory. That's why pretty much everybody, all the way back to Josephus, believes that there was a sudden flash flood that ruined the chariot advantage at this point and changed the whole dynamic of the fight. And it was God that did it. Then loud beat the horse's hooves with the galloping of his steeds. So they tried to make the horses work harder, but horses can only pull slogged down chariots so far. Then we have a little interesting curse put on another Israeli group that we know nothing about. Curse Meroz, apparently a town, says the angel of he who is, curse its inhabitants thoroughly, because they didn't come to the help of he who is, to the help of he who is against the mighty. So, who was it? Don't know. But they didn't show up for the fight, and they got a curse. Most blessed of women be Yael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, of tent-dwelling women most blessed. He asked for water. She gave him milk. She brought him curds in a noble's bowl. She sent her hand to the tent peg, her right hand to the workman's mallet. She struck Sisera. She crushed his head. She shattered and pierced his temple. Between her feet, he sank, he fell, he lay still. Between her feet, he sank, he fell. Where he sank, there he fell, dead. And so the fulfillment of Deborah's prophecy, the glory goes to the lady Yael. And then we have a little picture of Sisera's mom waiting back at the headquarters. Out of the window she peered. The mother of Sisera wailed through the lattice. Why is his chariot so long in coming? Why tarry the hoofbeats of his chariots? Her wisest princesses answer. Indeed, she answers herself. Haven't they not found and divided the spoil? A womb or two for every man, that is a captive woman apparently, spoil of dyed materials for Sisera, spoil of dyed materials embroidered, 2 pieces of dyed work embroidered for the neck as spoil. So they're trying to put a good face on it. They've just got so much stuff to divide up. But here's the way the song ends, the reality. So may all your enemies perish, O he who is. But may your friends be like the sun as he rises in his might. And that kind of foreshadows another story at another place that's coming up for another judge. And then the land had rest for 40 years. And then guess what? The cycle falls back to sin.